News from NPR is made possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Wednesday, December 28th, 2005. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. In agricultural news, U.S. agricultural trade groups are assembling their legislative wish lists for 2006. We'll have a report. Also, U.S. and Canadian beef is now on supermarket shelves in Japan. I'll have details of these and other stories this half hour. And Drew Lerner will be by with a look at agricultural weather. It's all on the Wednesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Wednesday afternoon, prices settled like this. March wheat at Kansas City, 390 and a quarter, up 4.5. March wheat at Chicago, 345.5, up 5.5. May, 354.25, up 5.25. March corn, 216.25, up 3/4. May, 225, up 3/4. July, 233, up 3/4. September, 240, down 1/4. January soybeans, 611, down 1/2. March, 622.25, down 1.5. July, 636.5, down 1.25. November, 635.25, down 1/2. January soybean meal, 202.40, down 1.40. January soybean oil, 20.84, down 14. At the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, January feeder cattle, 115, up 72.5. December live cattle, 95.22.5, up 45. And February lean hogs, 65.12.5, up 20 on the day.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Dave. And we had basically an office full of good WILL listeners, and we saw the markets ticking live on our big screens here in Oakland. Pretty exciting day in the commodity world.
Want to begin on the Merck side, where we just saw a U.S. quarterly hogs and pigs report released. All hogs and pigs December 1, 100% kept for breeding, 101 kept for marketing, 100. Any numbers in this report that will cause the market to move tomorrow?
You know, Dave, just looking at those basic numbers, I would say it's a fairly neutral report. The marketplace was expecting numbers a little higher than that. And so I'm going to say the only one that's a little larger than the average guess is kept for breeding. But I'm going to say it's business as usual at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. The markets were higher in the cash market, and I think when it was all said and done, I don't look for a major move based on that report on the opening tomorrow.
Why did the cattle show strength today?
Well, we understand that cattle market was also, you know, basically stronger. There's not enough sellers to accommodate the extra buying currently seen. The box beef prices were higher. The general feeling is, of course, it's a situation, I think, more than anything else, is just a firm market. The cattle market has been very friendly over the last few weeks. And, of course, before you came on the report, you did mention about good demand with the uptake of beef in Japan. And, of course, there's no better place to buy that delicacy right here in Illinois and Champaign or Danville, and the best quality of beef in the world is right here in the USA, bar none.
The big performer today, of course, the wheat pit. Both Kansas City and Chicago Board of Trade. Were we looking at some unwinding of spreads today?
You know, there's been that. And we understand that the commodity funds have gotten themselves accidentally short. In the Kansas City market, we saw EDF Man by 600, Cargill 500, Revco 200. Kalen, a commodity firm in Chicago, bought over 3,500 contracts. Funds bought 7,000 contracts of wheat. The RSI is a measure of overbought, oversold conditions, and particularly if it's over 70, the market's at 77%, which does indicate an overbought condition. The commodity funds are major buyers in Chicago, Minneapolis, and Kansas City. The other factor here is that private weather forecasters are basically not painting any rainfall event in the winter wheat growing areas of the West. There is some rain here, of course, in the Midwest. But all in all, it's a very bullish market in the wheat market, and it helped stabilize corn and soybeans when it was all said and done. It was the biggest show in town and at the all three major commodity pits in the United States.
There's a gap up there in the March wheat around 355. Do you like the chances of the uptrend getting there in the next,
I don't know, 30 days?
I
saw the charts there, and I did see that gap down opening. And, my general opinion here is that I have to say, Dave, the trend is higher. Some of this, I think most of the marketplace is anticipating index fund buying after the first of the year. My general impression, though, is it's still a little early to push wheat substantially higher based on today's fundamentals in the marketplace. Because we are getting wheat harvested in the southern hemisphere, we still have to compete with that commodity.
Lead month corn higher 0.75 cents today, but the interesting thing is it did touch 217. That nicked the 100-day moving average. Now I guess we'll see, can we push through it?
Well, and you know, we are looking, of course, major selling at 17, 18, 19, and $2.20 on the March futures contract. The RSI level on corn's at 75. Commodity funds bought over 8,000 contracts of corn. Our friend Mitch Dawson out in Goldfield, Iowa, with that ethanol and country grain elevator, said farmer movement was active out in the big state of Iowa. We are seeing some, basis weakening at CIF values on corn. The trend is unmistakably higher. We are seeing people put in cash offers on new crop corn at 250 and above. So, the general philosophy was at harvest time, give me a $2 bid, took 45 cent LDP, and so you'll see some cash movement. Some of the roads and lots are wet out in the Midwest, so, that's possibly restricting some movement. But the general war cry is that trains are moving. The barges are moving, grain's moving into the major industrial processing plants in the Midwest and grain terminals. So, it's an orderly market. The one sad thing here is like a cash bid here, 203 in central Illinois versus $1.85. So, there is this tremendous discrepancy in the price relationships, and transportation is one of the major problems of getting prices of grain higher at this time.
All right, then let's look at the soybeans down anywhere from 0.5 cents to 1.5 cents, make it 3 cents if you go into the May contract today. Really a day that did nothing one way or another to resolve where beans might be going.
Well, we have this satellite imagery picture that we go over, and let's look at the actual radar picture in Argentina, and there was scattered rain down there in some of those important growing areas of Buenos Aires and Cordoba. Rio Grande, in Argentina, that's where the people are watching. They're, you know, it's scattered, it's not general, and they postponed some of the rain into next week. The RSI on soybeans is 70. The crush margins seem to be good to excellent. The general feeling is the USDA could raise the production estimates on soybeans after the first of the year. The stocks of soybeans on the world are, we term, bloated. Seems like the Chinese buy not only U.S. beans, but also Argentina and Brazilian soybeans. They're still selling beans in the world market after dumping a ton of beans, you know, after we had the big Hurricane Katrina. My impression is that the $6-plus level on soybeans in the Midwest is, we are seeing farmers slowly move soybeans into the marketplace.
Thank you very much, Paul.
It's always nice to talk to you, Dave, and have a profitable day.
You too. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. In agricultural news, USDA will incorporate its first estimates of U.S. beef sales to Japan in the January 12th supply and demand report. Prior to that report, USDA projections assumed no sales of beef to Japan. The two countries recently announced U.S. beef can now be shipped to Japan from animals 20 months or under, and U.S. beef hit Tokyo supermarkets yesterday on a trial basis. Meanwhile, the Canadian press is reporting today that beef from Canada was also back on some supermarket shelves in Tokyo on Tuesday, following the lifting of a 2-year ban on imports. But it may take years to rebuild Japanese consumer confidence in North American beef. There have been 21 cases of mad cow disease reported in Japan since 2001, and consumers have been suspicious of the safety of beef after their own government officials covered up several of the BSE cases. Japan's Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare has begun mandatory inspection of all U.S. food corn arrivals at Japanese ports for aflatoxin after the cancer-causing mold was found in a shipment recently. Japan has a zero-tolerance policy for aflatoxin in food corn while allowing certain levels of the mold in feed corn. A few days ago, Japanese officials detected 18 parts per billion aflatoxin in a 200 metric ton shipment of U.S. food corn. Japan imported 3.6 million tons of food corn from the U.S. in 2004. Energy, budget issues, trade, a new farm bill, and waterway infrastructure are the top priorities for the American Farm Bureau Federation in 2006. That's according to AFBF Executive Director of Public Policy, Mark Maslin. Maslin says the Farm Bureau will try to build on the 2005 energy bill and get more ethanol and biodiesel in more pumps and vehicles in more places nationwide. On the supply side, Maslin says the Farm Bureau will continue to push for drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and new offshore natural gas drilling. And Maslin says lawmakers who blocked those efforts in 2005 should pay a political price in 2006.
There is an effort ongoing in the House, especially, to look for ways to enact legislation allowing for more exploration and extraction in the outer continental shelf. And anybody that likes $2.50 or $3 gasoline or diesel fuel ought to thank those members of Congress who stood up and blocked enactment of those.
And Maslin says there may well be another effort to wring budget savings from the 2002 Farm Bill, an effort Maslin says the Farm Bureau will resist.
There is, as you know, the budget pressure that's ongoing in the 2002 Farm Bill, and just as we faced budget reconciliation challenges in 2005, we will face those again in 2006, and so that's something that we'll be looking at, trying to minimize any alteration or significant changes in the 2002 Farm Bill.
For agriculture, the budget-cutting bill takes more from conservation and rural development than from crop supports. It also does not extend several titles of the 2002 Farm Bill, a move Senate Ag Committee Chairman Saxby Chambliss proposed to protect the ag budget baseline ahead of the 2007 Farm Bill debate. and advanced direct payment rates are cut from 50% to 22% over the next 2 years, all of which Mary Kay Thatcher, Director of Public Policy for the Farm Bureau, says will make protecting the ag baseline in the next farm bill more difficult.
The way the budget works is that 22% will continue on in perpetuity. And so that means that the amount of money that's in the baseline to be spent in 2007 to rewrite the farm bill will be less than it would have had we been able to extend some of those titles to 2011. So it will be less. There's a lot of other factors that feed in on the baseline, like how much are we spending in agricultural programs. You know, one of the helps for us is we're actually spending a lot of money this year. So it sounds crazy that it's a help, but it's a help on an inside the beltway perspective because it makes the baseline larger. But overall, we would have liked to protect that baseline, as would every agricultural group.
Maslin says the Farm Bureau will also try to get the Senate to take up the Water Resources Development Act, a measure that would upgrade locks and dams on the Upper Mississippi and Illinois rivers. The House passed the bill in July. The National Association of Wheat Growers also announced its wish list for 2006. CEO Darren Kopic says the group will focus on making the U.S. farm program less susceptible to an international legal challenge and will ask Congress to spend more on decoupled direct payments in the next farm bill.
What we're trying to do is make sure that the program that we have relies more on the less trade-distorting aspects of the farm bill. Everybody agrees that direct payments that go to the producer, regardless of production decisions, what crop that producer decides to grow, are the least trade-distorting and therefore the best in the eyes of the WTO. And so our proposal will be to orient more of the support in that kind of a form, let the market decide what's produced rather than the government program provide incentives for that, and provide our support through a much more in that direct decoupled kind of a system.
Kopic says if Congress does not reorient the new farm bill toward decoupled direct payments, marketing loan programs, as they're currently known, may not have a place in the 2007 version.
That probably means that we're going to put less emphasis on some of the ones that are tied directly to production, things like marketing loans and LDPs. And those are the ones that typically get criticized in the WTO arena because there are people who claim that those loan rates provide incentives for production and therefore distort the market. So that's the general philosophy that the wheat industry is headed at the moment.
The National Cattlemen's Beef Association says it also has identified a handful of measures it wants lawmakers to ratify in the 110th Congress. CEO Terry Stokes.
I certainly believe that as we look at this next session of Congress that we can see some positive change with the Endangered Species Act that's beneficial to our producers. Also say that there are a number of other issues that are very important to us. We want to achieve permanency with the tax reforms that have been put in place, particularly permanent repeal of the death tax. That's a high priority for us as we move into this coming year for producers. And then another key area is focused on environmental regulation and mitigating environmental regulations on our producers.
Leaders of the congressional ag committees have promised field hearings in 2006 for the 2007 Farm Bill. Lawmakers are scheduled to return to Washington, D.C. in January. USDA's Risk Management Agency says it made significant headway against fraud and abuse in the crop insurance program in 2005. According to RMA, its best success has come from its spot check listing program. RMA is currently completing the 2005 spot check list for the 2004 crop year and will have results available by April of 2006. Meanwhile, RMA says it also worked closely with USDA's Inspector General and the Department of Justice in 2005 to successfully prosecute several ag producers who defrauded the crop insurance program. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Joining us now with our look at the cash grain market is Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Dave.
Well, I would assume that farmer selling has been slow in the last week, but I want to double check that with you. Has it?
No. The producer has really been active sellers here, corn and beans both, and which I think is a heck of a good idea. We've had a decent rally here. Most of it is short covering. Most of it is technical. They're worried about the big index funds coming in and buying in case of inflation. That would definitely be friendly. But, you know, Dave, when you stop and think we got down to $1.58 or so, we've gained almost over 40 cents back in this corn market. Last year we were 217 on new crop corn. Today we're 222. Beans got down to 517, 518. Now we're close to $6. And we're 60 cents higher on new crop beans. So, you know, we've had a lot of active selling as far as cash and all the way over to new crop here the last week or 10 days.
And the interesting thing about it is with the rally on the futures, the basis has held in there pretty well.
The basis has held in here pretty well. Now, you're going to see that deteriorate. We've already started a little bit. We took 2 cents out of the cash corn basis a week ago, and we took 2 cents out of the beans today. So you're going to see this basis erode as these farmers start emptying their bins out in January. But basically, yes, it has pretty well held its own.
Where might basis end up as the erosion begins?
Well, I think we could see a dime out of this corn basis. Beans, maybe 5 to 10 cents. I don't think it's going to totally fall out of bed, but you know, there's just an awful lot of corn out there to be moved, and the farmer likes to move it in January. He needs a little money for input costs, so I think we could see a dime out of the basis and maybe 20 to 30 cents out of the board before this is all said and done, if we see the same pattern we saw a year ago.
Those big LDPs that producers were able to take in the fall, those 45 to 48 cents LDPs on corn, to what degree does that delay producers needing to make decisions on moving grain?
Well, it does delay their decision because they really needed cash. They got that to get themselves through the holidays and then the last week or so. Now their interest is turned to how to get rid of what I've got in my bin. So it was a kind of a twofold purpose, and really it paid off pretty well because he held off and now he's gotten some significant gains and we need to take advantage of it.
Your prices today?
Cash corn is $1.99, cash beans are $5.95, and new crop wheat today is $3.39.
Thank you very much, Kay.
Thank you, Dave.
Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. And in about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Drew Lerner about the weather.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Joe Brunswald, the man who oversaw a stormy period for the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, is retiring Saturday. A spokesman for Governor Rob Blagojevich says the 63-year-old former state lawmaker from Milan is retiring to spend more time with his family. Assistant Director Sam Flood will serve as DNR interim chief. Blagojevich appointed Brunswald to head the DNR in 2003, but he had to lay off 120 workers in 2004 because of budget cuts. And earlier this year, the Associated Press reported that Brunswald used state aircraft to shuttle to and from his Quad Cities home to attend business-related events and to go to two charity hunting trips in South Dakota. An additional 56,000 low-income families in Illinois will be eligible for state-sponsored health insurance starting Sunday. The expanded family care program for working parents raises the income level for eligibility to 185% of the federal poverty level, or about $36,000 for a family of four. Children of working families also are eligible for health care coverage through the government's KidCare program. The eligibility limit for KidCare is 200% of the poverty level. Giving schools more flexibility to free up money for teaching tops the education proposals for the upcoming Indiana General Assembly from Governor Mitch Daniels and State Superintendent Sue Ellen Reed. Daniels wants to cut red tape so schools have more freedom on spending decisions. Officials in Park County, Indiana, say they're confident the 137-year-old Bridgeton Bridge can be rebuilt. An arsonist destroyed the covered bridge earlier this year. Park County Commissioner Jim Meese says the bridge will be rebuilt using the same types of materials and craftsmanship that went into the original structure. He says there's a lot of community support for the Bridgeton Bridge, and he's confident enough wood will be donated to complete it. Former Cumberland County Judge Robert Kochenour has been acquitted of a forgery charge. A judge says even though Kochenour signed an elderly woman's name to an $89,000 banknote, there's no evidence anyone had been hurt by it. Kochenour has already served prison time for stealing from the estate of Greenup businessman Jay Hayden. He still faces several civil lawsuits connected to that case. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, helping to create a storehouse of possibilities and products from a single seed. ADM, resourceful by nature.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is Drew Lerner, the senior agricultural meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon.
Well, I guess the question on everybody's minds in the soybean pit is, are we going to continue to see net drying in far southern Brazil or not? What say you?
In far southern Brazil, I think we don't need to be terribly concerned about the situation down there. Southernmost sections of Brazil will see some timely shower and thunderstorm activity as we move forward over the next week to 10 days. But it won't be so much rain that the soil is going to become saturated. We will probably still have pockets of dryness that will be prevalent across parts of the far south there, but it's not going to be what I would consider threatening to production potential. As long as we continue to see rain come and go periodically, it doesn't really matter how much rain occurs as long as the timeliness of that precipitation occurs. And that's going to be kind of reminiscent a little bit of what happened in parts of the Midwest here last summer, where we managed to get some timely rains, even though amounts of rainfall were still below average.
At the Chicago Board of Trade today, we saw in the soybean pits a little bit softer prices. Paul Cooley says, well, it rained a little bit down in Argentina, but I don't think we probably have gotten quite as much as we need to get down there yet. Is that right?
Well, that's absolutely correct. There's still a very large portion of Argentina that is lacking precipitation and soil moisture right now. The pattern that we're in is one that has become rather disorganized. We don't have any well-defined frontal systems moving across the region, at least not at the moment. Now, maybe something will move through the region as we go into the end of the weekend and early part of next week, and that's our best opportunity for something that might be a little bit more meaningful. Between now and then, though, showers and thunderstorms will be random in nature, and the amount of moisture that's in the atmosphere will stay quite limited, and that means that somebody out there may get a locally heavy storm, but the majority of Argentina will see net drying and an increase in crop moisture stress. Temperatures will be in the 80s and lower to middle 90s on a daily basis, and that'll go right on through most of next week, even though we will have a little frontal boundary coming across the region on Sunday night into Monday. Like I said before, that early week system next week is our first opportunity for meaningful rainfall. Until then, I do not believe that we'll see any kind of improvement in crop conditions, and if anything, we'll see a little bit of a deterioration. But we will see those spotty showers popping up.
It's not very often, I suppose, that here in the Midwest on the last week of December, you can say, boy, there might be a chance of a isolated thunderstorm or two passing through.
That's right. It's just one more notch in the ladder for those people who are trying to promote global warming, I guess. But indeed, we do have a chance for thunderstorms across a portion of the Midwest. But probably the most important thing that's going on across the Midwest right now is the increase in soil moisture that has already taken place and will continue to take place in portions of the region. Now, most of this improvement, of course, has been east of the Mississippi River and not necessarily in the driest areas of Illinois, but certainly Indiana has seen a big improvement in soil moisture. The areas that still need it, that is, need significant rainfall, are in Nebraska, Iowa, and northern central sections of Illinois. We will have a tough chore ahead of us in trying to get that moisture over the next few weeks. The bias will continue to be for below average precipitation in the plains and the western part of the Corn Belt. Now, Illinois may do all right over time, but we've got a long ways to go to get these moisture deficits taken care of, and that's what we're going to be watching most closely here over the next few weeks.
Thanks much, Drew.
Have a great day.
Drew Lerner, senior agricultural meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that's today's closing market report. Join us tomorrow morning at 8:49 Central Time for our first look at the markets. This is Dave Dickey.